This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today on Keeping the Faith, we're going to be talking about school safe zones in Kenya, in Africa, with a retired professor from the University of Illinois, Esther Portnoy, from the math department. Welcome, Esther.
Thank you.
It's good to have you on the program today. And we have on by phone someone from Church World Service, Dennis Metzger. Dennis, where are we talking to you from?
I'm located in Chatham, Illinois, just south of Springfield.
Chatham, Illinois. Well, we have a good connection with you, so great. Let's talk a little bit about how this trip came about, Esther.
Well, we got an invitation from, my husband and I got an invitation from Dennis. We have been supporters of Church World Service for quite a while. People may recognize that I'm the local event coordinator for Crop Walk, which is one of the major fundraisers for Church World Service. Dennis invited us on a number of trips over the past few years, and it always seemed to conflict with something else that was going on. But this time, the time seemed right, and we said, yes, let's go. And we joined a small group. There were four other people, in addition to the two of us, and then Dennis sort of leading it.
And Dennis, how long have you been taking trips like this of U.S. folks to Kenya?
I took a group to Rwanda 4 years ago and to the Dominican Republic 2 years ago.
Several different places. And tell us why you drag folks along with you.
Put quite simply, we're happy to take supporters of Church World Service out to see what we're doing with their money.
And
as simple as that.
And what was the object of going to Kenya?
One of the programs that Church World Service conducts in Kenya, we call School Safe Zones. It's support for primary education in various places in Kenya.
And Esther, when you and your husband, Steve, took off on this trip, what did you hope to see, and how did that compare with what you actually saw?
Well, I think we hoped to see a number of schools, see what improvements they were experiencing through the help of Church World Service. I think we were pleased beyond our expectations. Really came away very energized. I think sometimes we have the feeling that Africa is a lost cause. There's so much AIDS and civil strife and so forth and so on that people may be tempted to throw up their hands. But we were really impressed with the efforts of the teachers and the parents, the enthusiasm of the children. They really are making strides. Unquestionably, there are problems, but they're really making strides.
Now, for listeners who may not be familiar with either Church World Service and maybe have never heard of School Safe Zones there or anywhere else, let's start first with Church World Service. Why don't we begin with you, Dennis? Tell us what the organization is, a little bit of its history.
Church World Service is an international relief, development, and refugee services agency. We were founded in 1946 in the United States. We are incorporated under the laws of the state of New York, but we operate in some 40 countries around the world in terms of our programs, and we draw financial support from North America, Europe, and a little from Australia and New Zealand.
And how many, it's by using the word church, it's a Christian organization?
We're a faith-based organization. We have been a Christian organization and are currently in the process of revising our bylaws and our organization. And we could, in future, the door will be open to non-Christian faith groups. We could become an interfaith organization over time.
So you're at least in the process of deciding that?
Yes, I think the votes will be taken very soon.
And what is the structure? Who gets to vote?
The members. At this point in time, the members of Church World Service are the same Christian denominations that are members of the National Council of the Churches of Christ in the United States of America. That, under the new bylaws, will be opened up to other faith groups.
Okay, so there are new bylaws being considered as we speak.
That's correct. Current members will vote on the admission of new members.
Okay. And so people who listen to this program can say they heard it first that that might happen.
I expect that it is happening, yes.
Okay. Esther, what about you're the coordinator for the local Crop Walk Committee, event coordinator. This program does originate in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, but there are crop walks that happen around the year and around the country. So tell us about the local one, because it's coming up fairly soon and people may want to participate.
Right. Our local walk will be 4 weeks from today, April 22nd. If people are interested in participating, they probably should get in touch with me. It's not just a business of showing up on the 22nd and walking. It is basically a fundraising. We have a good time walking, but it's primarily a fundraising effort.
And how many people get in touch with you if they'd like to participate?
Okay, probably the best way is to go to our website, cu-cropwalk.org. For people who aren't in Champaign-Urbana, they can go to the Church World Service. It's www.churchworldservice. You have to spell it out. .org. Click on Crop Walk. A map comes up. Click on your state, and you can probably find a crop walk near you. They tend to be mostly in the spring and the fall.
Uh-huh. All right. And April 22nd in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. Dennis, do you work with coordinators all around? This program is heard in Illinois and Indiana, from Chicago to Indianapolis. Do you know of... have some sense of how many are going on in this region?
Talking of the crop hunger walks, actually, I do not. It's a different set of people within Church World Service who work with the hunger walk committees. I work with individuals who are top-end supporters of Church World Service.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about the trip to Kenya and about school safe zones. What are school safe zones? Esther, you've just come back from Kenya. Tell us about them.
Okay. I wanted to read a sentence from the material that they gave us when we started the trip. A school safe zone is a place of safety, a healthy environment with access to healthy and nutritious meals during each school day, and where the best interests of the child is the primary consideration in all deliberations. Safety is meant in a very broad sense, not just their physical safety, but their health, their emotional development, their self-confidence. It just entails a wide variety of things, focused on the school, but extending into the family, into the neighborhood.
How did this program begin?
As I understand it, it began about 10 years ago. I think Church World Service was instrumental right at the beginning, but they were also working with the government of Kenya, which in 2003 established a policy that every child should have access to a free primary education. Free means the Kenyan government pays and places teachers, but the local community has to set up the school, find the land, build the classrooms, find desks, pay for books, and so forth and so on. And the parents have to pay for uniforms and some supplies and so on. So there aren't school fees, but there are expenses. Each school had a school management committee, which is something on the spectrum of a school board or PTA, but not exactly either one of those. They don't have to hire and pay the teachers, but they have to, handle almost everything else. And Church World Service, together with the Kenyan government, selected 10 schools in disadvantaged areas of Kenya and worked intensively with the with the school committees, training the treasurers and the chairs of these committees, training the parents as well. The school committees are all the members are parents. They are elected by the parents of children in the school. And with a certain amount of turnover, of course, you manage then to train quite a few of the parents over a few years. And when you build their self-confidence and get them to recognize that there are things that they can do to improve things, that transmits to the children as well, who begin to realize that they can do some things.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon here on WILL Radio, AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD3, we're talking about a program of Church World Service that involves school safe zones in Kenya and other places. This is a live call-in show, and people who are listening, we encourage to call and make a comment or share an experience or ask a question. To do that, the number is 333-9455 if it's a local call in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area. If it's long distance, there's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So if it's long distance, 1-800-222-WILL, locally 333-WILL. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. But I'm happy to share the questioning with our guests. And today we're talking with Dennis Metzger from Church World Service and with retired Professor Esther Portnoy from the math department here at the University of Illinois, who is the local coordinator for the Crop Walks. Esther, let's talk a little bit more about what happened when you got off the plane. You landed in Nairobi?
We landed in Nairobi about 9:30 at night. Were taken to a hotel and crashed.
Had you been in Africa ever before?
I had never been in Africa before. Uh-huh. At least one of the group members had been. The following day, we went to a school in Nairobi, in one of the slum areas of Nairobi, which was one of the original 10 schools. They've now expanded to about 80 schools, by the way.
In Kenya.
Yes, all in Kenya. I think the vision is for East Africa more generally, but it started in Kenya partly because of the governmental cooperation. When we got off of the vehicles at this school in the Wangu School in Nairobi, the children mobbed us. I mean, they were so excited to see us. They were just all around calling, wanting to shake our hands and so forth. We met with the head teacher, who is a woman. Several of the head teachers, that's sort of like principal. Several of the head teachers are female. They were excited. We had a bit of a light day that first day, recognizing that we had had almost 24 hours travel to get there. They let us take that first day easy. This school is located right next to a big dump in Nairobi. And it was, the children and the teachers alike were discouraged, I think, by this. It's bad enough to have a child here, oh, you go to the dump school, but apparently the teachers would also hear, oh, you teach at the dump school. I think partly through the efforts of a really outstanding head teacher and I hope through the efforts of Church World Service as well, things have turned around. It has become a demonstration school. They've raised test scores. They're improving retention, keeping children in the schools through the eighth grade level and sending more and more of them on to secondary school. I can talk about some of the specific things that they've done.
Maybe about what's the current education level throughout Kenya? Do you know any of those statistics?
I don't really have statistics. Okay. As I said, the policy, the aim is to have every child able to have a free primary education. I suppose maybe in principle every child is supposed to be in school, but I don't get the impression that it's enforced particularly well. Uh-huh. Secondary education is not free. They have to take an exam at the end of the eighth grade, and whether you can go to any secondary school, and if so, what level you can go, is determined in part by the grades on that exam. So there's a lot of pressure on them.
Dennis Metzger on the phone. Do you have any any information on literacy rates, say, in Kenya or education achievement rates?
Kenya is composed of people of different ethnicities, and literacy rates are going to vary by ethnic group.
Ah, okay.
I do recall the statistic that 1 million students in Kenya take this end of primary school, eighth grade departing exam annually, and only a small percentage of them go on to secondary school.
I see.
I think there's a great drop-off in school attendance at the end of the eighth grade, is
Certainly.
My impression.
Okay. How long has Church World Service been working with this project in Kenya and elsewhere?
This project goes back to the year 2003, when the Kenyan government abolished school fees, that is, tuition payments for primary school.
Uh-huh.
Enrollment tripled, but facilities did not triple. School buildings and the furniture, et cetera, in those buildings are the responsibility of these local school management committees, which have no taxing authority. So it was a tremendous burden on them to be faced with needing to triple classroom space in the course of 1 year.
How much money from Church World Service goes towards this project, projects?
We put about $80,000 a year into this program.
Yeah, throughout Kenya?
Yes.
And 80,000 in, you said, 80 schools?
Something like that, right.
But that's enough money to really make a significant difference?
Yes. We use what's called an asset-based methodology. That is, conversation with the local school management committee starts with what they have to contribute. And we don't go the next step until they've identified and can embrace the fact that they do have something to contribute. In some of the very poorest communities, it might be only labor, but they do have things to contribute. Then we can talk about what Church World Service will add. Then we can also talk about what their priorities are, where we start. Do they need a fence around the school? Do they need more classrooms? Do they need doors on their doors and windows in their windows? Does the roof leak? What are their priorities? The local school management committee must take ownership, and we work to empower them so that they can take ownership of their school and its future.
And it's going to be very different in different communities. One of the places that we went in the beautiful, down in the Maasai country. The country is beautiful. You get these long vistas, but it also means the schools are few and far between. The children walk a long, long distance to school. And so one of the priorities in many of those schools is to create dormitories so the children don't have to walk, 8 kilometers each way every day. They can come and stay for several days. In the city schools, that's not an issue. There are other issues in the city schools. So each of these school committees has to decide on the priorities for themselves.
Tell us about some other schools that you visited just in the last month.
Okay. We visited several schools in the Muranga area, a little north of Nairobi. That's a little bit wetter than some of the other areas. It's not a particularly wealthy area, though. I think none of the areas where this project is going on are well-to-do. One of the schools we visited apparently was approached by the Kenyan Department of Fisheries saying, you have some land, you have adequate water, how about starting a fish hatchery? So they have a pond, a plastic-lined pond. They get fingerling fish in there every so often and raise them. The children help feed the fish and so on. And that, I think, probably supplements their school lunch a bit and presumably also gives them a source of income. Many of the schools actually are growing some vegetables, planting trees, trying to partly to beautify the place, to help the self-esteem of the students, and partly also to produce some some edible stuff, edible and saleable stuff.
When crop walks began, when Church World Service started being involved back during the end of World War II, they were sending crops from the U.S. and other places to war-ravaged Europe, I know, from the history. There was a focus almost entirely on world hunger and trying to fight it various ways. Getting involved in education, basic primary education, is relatively new, it sounds like, as a part of that whole package.
Well, there's been a gradual change. It might be interesting to talk about the CROP name, which, if I recall correctly, back in the 40s and 50s was Christian Rural Overseas Project or something like that, and hardly any of that is applicable anymore. Oh. In the last few years, we've used the tag Communities Responding to Overcome Poverty. I mean, after all, while there are probably some instances where hunger is simply a result of lack of food because of a famine, a drought, flood, things like that, more often hunger is a result of poverty. There is food there, but many people can't afford it. So if you really are serious about putting an end to hunger, you need to address the problem of poverty. And that means empowering people to develop their skills, to make their way better in the world.
And education is, of course, basic to that.
Right.
Yes. Hunger remains our overarching theme at Church World Service. But within that theme of fighting hunger, we have programming in three areas: water and sanitation, nutrition and food security, and a category we call all our children.
Tell us about each of those.
Water and sanitation is in arid parts of the world, it's a focus on securing water and protecting those water sources. In places in the world where there's plenty of water, there can be a situation in which the water is simply not safe and is a disease carrier due to inadequate sanitation. So the primary focus would be sanitation. Under nutrition and food security, this is adequate food and adequate knowledge about the nutritional value of food. An anecdotal story here: 2 years ago, when I was in the Dominican Republic with a group of supporters from Church World Service, we visited a village in which some years before they had found families selling eggs in order to buy bread to feed their children. They thought they were doing well by their children because they were giving their children a greater volume of food. Obviously not a wise practice. And then under all our children, we have support for education, we have empowerment, we have of youth-headed households, particularly in East Africa, where the HIV jumped species to humans, where the AIDS epidemic is the oldest. We have a special program in which we empower youth-headed households to get their feet on the ground and make their way in the world. These are all programs within all our children under the general theme of hunger.
Esther, let's go back a minute to your experience traveling with your husband, Steve, who's off singing tonight, right?
That's why he can't be with us.
Oh, playing the violin. Okay. So you two on this trip were taking these various schools. How many different ones did you visit?
I think there were 8 or 9 different schools. Basically, the one in Nairobi, I think 3 in the Muranga area, which is north of Nairobi, 3 south of Nairobi in the Kajiado area, which is Maasai country, and then 2 a little west of that in the far southwest Kenya, in Kuria, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which was described to us as one of the most, one of the least developed parts of the country.
And tell us where Kenya is located.
Well, it's in East Africa, south of Ethiopia. I don't know how to do much better than that without a map in hand.
It's south of Ethiopia. It's the next place south of Somalia, which is having extreme difficulties right now, north of Tanzania.
Okay.
And all the places we visited were sort of Nairobi and west. My impression is that that's where most of the school safe zones work is done. I'm not sure whether the Church World Service and other projects in Kenya is also more or less concentrated in that area. Kenya has a substantial Christian population, also substantial Muslim population, but it's sort of east-west, not completely divided, of course, but that's my understanding of things.
And the schools are made up of students from both those religious traditions.
Yes, yes. We're dealing here entirely with public schools.
Yes.
There are some private schools as well. But.
And Church World Service, although its past history is Christian and it's moving toward being an interfaith organization, it provides money for children of any religious tradition or none.
Yeah, and is active in some countries that have very small Christian populations.
Uh-huh. Dennis, can you tell us about some of those other countries?
Oh, we have a major program in Pakistan and Afghanistan where we're working with self-help development projects, also healthcare and mobile health units. And Pakistan is quite disaster-prone. Between earthquakes and floods, and so we do a lot of local relief work in Pakistan. That would be one example.
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program tonight, talking about Church World Service, and particularly its program in Kenya, creating safe school zones for children there. We'll be getting back to our guests, Dennis Metzger and Esther Portnoy, in just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. And next week, our program here on Keeping the Faith will feature an interview with Jackie Lynn, who is the National Director of the Episcopal Peace Fellowship. We'll be talking with her by phone from Chicago. On April 8th, our guest will be Josh Slocum by telephone. He's the National Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Association of the U.S., and in our studio will be Peter Dick, who is the president of the local Funeral Consumers Association here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, talking about less expensive ways to deal with issues around funerals and death. On April 15, we'll be talking about Earth Care, with two folks from a local congregation, David Sherwood and Reverend Catherine Cusmel. Earth Care, how a congregation can be responsible in terms of taking care of the environment. On April 22nd, we have a very special archive program. Roger Ebert, the Pulitzer Prize-winning film critic, will be our guest again by replaying a program that he did here on Keeping the Faith clear back in 1999, the very first year of this program, and also the very first year of the Roger Ebert Overlooked Film Festival at the Virginia Theater here in Champaign and Urbana, Illinois. Roger, as most of you know, has lost his voice due to cancer. For the last several years, we've not been able to hear him speak, but we are going to replay a long-lost archive program where he'll be talking about religious themes in films. He did that interview before the very first film festival, and he was quite anxious about whether it was going to come off or not, so it'll be interesting to hear that program. That's April 22nd. Support for Keeping the Faith over the years has been provided by the University YMCA here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. This semester's Friday Forum series has been dealing with creative approaches to global development. These are a series of free lectures, Friday noons at the Y. The next one will be March 30th. Can globalization promote human rights? Rhoda Howard Hossman is the speaker. She has the Canada Research Chair in International Human Rights. That'll be March 30, a noon lecture at the University Y, the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street in Champaign. If you'd like to order a lunch in advance, you may call the Y 337-1500. That's an area code 217. Or simply take a bag lunch or simply listen to the lecture and have a chance for question and answers following. The Edible Book Festival will be at the Y April 2nd at noon. You may call the Y and learn more about that, or the School of Library and Information Sciences that's helping co-sponsor that. That's always a very fun event. Students who are interested in the Bailey Scholarship can find out about that April 3rd at the Y at 4:30. The Y gives over $100,000 away in scholarships to university students who are meet certain criteria. If you'd like to find out more about that, do call the Y at 337-1500. There's a very interesting art show currently at the Y in the main lobby. You can might want to take a look at that if you're just by the University Y now that school is back in session starting tomorrow. Well, let's get back to our guest today here on Keeping the Faith. By phone, we're talking with Dennis Metzger from Church World Service, and in our studio is retired Professor Esther Portnoy. Esther, tell us a little bit about your background. You've taught math, actuarial science is your special, was your specialty.
It was. Yeah. I retired in 2004, and I've been doing other things since then.
But tell us what actuarial science is.
Actuarial science is the mathematical foundation for insurance. Our students would study a fair amount of mathematics, but also finance. They need both of those things, put them together to make the insurance business work, to make sure that premiums are adequate and reserves are adequate.
And how long did you teach here at the university?
Let's see. We came in 1974, but I didn't get involved in the actuarial program until about 1980, and then I retired in 2004.
Okay. And what is your own educational background?
I have 3 degrees from Stanford University, BS, MS, PhD in mathematics.
Where did you grow up?
Well, here and there. I was born in the Detroit area, but spent high school years in upstate Michigan and in Connecticut. Actually started college at Boston University and then transferred to Stanford.
From one side of the country to the other.
Right.
Wow. Tell us about your religious background.
I'm a member at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church, the Lutheran Campus Center for the ELCA. Grew up in the Lutheran Church.
ELCA is Evangelical
Lutheran Church in America.
And did you grow up Lutheran?
Yes.
Where did you meet your spouse, Steve, who went on this trip to Kenya with you?
We met at the Science Fiction Society at MIT, which is part of the reason I transferred to Stanford in my junior year, because he was going there for graduate work.
So you were still at Boston when you went to that?
Right.
Okay. Let me ask Dennis, the National Council of Churches that has organized and sponsored Church World Service and these crop walks all around the country, how many different religious denominations are part of the National Council of Churches?
I believe it's 37.
Can you list some of them?
Sure. If I could.
We'll help you.
I'm scrambling looking for a list.
Well,
I found it.
All 37, but jump around. Give us every eighth one or something.
Okay. Well, the African Methodist Episcopal Church and the AME Zion and the Antiochian Orthodox Christian Archdiocese of North America, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, the Church of the Brethren, the Episcopal Church, the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of America, and so on. You know, the the Moravians, the National Missionary Baptists, the Presbyterian Church, the Reformed Church in America, the United Methodists, the United Church of Christ. That's a sampling.
Okay, that's giving us a notion. And so all these different denominations can cooperate at least occasionally on something.
The original thinking when Church World Service was founded in 1946, at that point it was 17 Protestant denominations. The original thinking was, we do not need to, each one of us, put a representative in every refugee camp in Europe. We can do this better together.
So, and I was joking, of course, but there has been remarkable cooperation on some very significant things over the decades.
Yes, yes. Relief, development, and refugee services, primarily. To look at it from the other side, these denominations, they kept their church planting efforts for their own. They kept their hospitals. They kept their boarding schools. But they decided that in matters of relief, in matters of development work, and in refugee services, we can do this better together.
And eventually fighting world hunger.
Yes.
Let me give the phone numbers again so listeners may join our conversation. 333-9455 in the Champaign-Urbana listening area where WILL studio is. That's area code 217. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, if you've missed part of this program or would like to hear any of our other programs, you may go to our archives, which can be found at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and leave the G off of keeping. The title of this program is very informal, but if you go to that, you can listen to these programs at your convenience. And, of course, this program is heard live online at will.illinois.edu/am, and we know we have many listeners online. You may use the toll-free line to call our guests. If you're listening online, that's, again, 800-222-WILL. See, we have a couple listeners with questions. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for Dennis. I'm curious about if you are able to turn Church World Service into a really totally interfaith organization, what do you think it would be called? And the reason I ask that is because years ago in a different town, I used to belong to a group called Church Women United, and they had started expanding so that they were starting to include Buddhist groups and Jewish groups and whatever. And I'm a member of the High Faith, so that pretty much appealed to me. But they didn't change their name, and so the local Jewish group, which was about the only other diversity they had in that town, didn't really get involved. They got involved on paper, but they never really came or anything, and I always thought it might have been because of the name. So I'm just curious that if you have any idea what the name might change to.
I've not heard any speculation about this. These things will happen at the board of directors level, which is well above my pay grade. There is the possibility that we may come to be known simply as CWS. As, for example, there's an organization called CARE, which used to be an acronym and is not anymore. It's simply known as CARE.
Okay.
Caller, did you have a name to suggest?
No.
Okay.
No, I was just curious because I just remember that experience. I enjoyed being in the group a lot, but I'm Baha'i and my background is Jewish, and I always wished that the Jewish ladies would get involved, but they didn't.
Thank you very much for the question. Appreciate it. Let's go to another caller waiting on line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Line two, go ahead.
Yes, I wonder if Esther had a chance to see the... to enter the schoolroom and tell us a little bit about what they're learning. Are they doing things regarding agriculture or what?
Okay.
Thanks for the question.
We were in several schoolrooms. I have to say, when we arrived, it sort of disrupted whatever was going on. There was no question about it. But we did see things on the walls. They were doing some serious mathematics in some of the rooms. These are primary schools. They were doing math lessons. I understand that the curriculum includes English and Swahili and math and social studies, and I'm probably missing some other things. One of the interesting things was one of the last schools we visited, we had brought box lunches. We visited them in the late morning, and then the children went home for lunch, and we had our box lunches, and the teachers had a more typical African meal prepared by a woman that they employed to do that. And we looked at their lunch, and they looked at our lunch, and we sort of swapped. I think we were both happy with the change. But from our box lunches, they pulled out the apples, and the first and second grade teachers said, oh, please, can we take the apples to class? Because, you know, the children are learning the alphabet, and they say A is for apple. And so they've seen pictures of apples, but they've never actually seen an apple. And we can take a knife and cut these into very tiny little pieces, and every child can have a sliver of apple. That maybe doesn't tell you much about what sorts of things they were studying. We did find a variety of in the physical condition of the classrooms. Some of them had basically dirt floors. It's preferable, of course, to have a poured concrete floor, a sealed floor. It keeps things quite a bit neater. They had somewhat rudimentary desks for the most part, just benches where two or three students would sit together. There wasn't always very good lighting. Some of the schools have electricity, but many of them have not.
What was the number of students per teacher?
Oh, it was fairly large. They were, they were aiming for maybe 35 or 40 at the very youngest ages.
But the youngest age was?
The first and second grade, 6 years old, something like that.
Similar to our schools here.
Yeah, they start at about the same age. The grade 8 classes are smaller, partly because so many children drop out usually.
Financial reasons?
Well,
health
for
reasons?
A variety of reasons. Okay. One of the things is that there are still, in many of the areas, an expectation that girls especially will marry quite young, by 12 or so. And that's one of the things that many of the schools are working hard on, is encouraging the girls to stay in school, encouraging the parents to keep the girls in school and not to... to recognize there are other things that a girl can do besides get married early and start bearing children. One of the grade 8 classrooms, I remember, had about 25 students, of whom 7 or 8 were girls. And these are the kids who are preparing for these very serious exams. These schools were all eager to share with us their progress in sending more and more students to secondary school, including some to the national secondary schools, which are where you probably have to go if you're going to go to university.
I'm trying to imagine a class of 46-year-olds.
Right. we have a lot of pictures, and I'm happy to bring them around to churches. If you go onto our cucropwalk.org website, you'll find my contact information, and I'm happy to bring our slideshow to groups of any sorts. Sunday morning is probably going to be difficult to schedule, especially the next few weeks, but I'm happy to come and share the pictures and more of the stories.
And so cu-cropwalk.org is a way to contact you to have you come to an a faith group. And for people who don't have computer skills, phone number?
I could give you my phone number. It's area code 217-367-8853. You'll probably talk to my answering machine.
Okay, that number again is 217-367-8853. And please, no calls to Esther offering her lower interest rates on her.
Right.
Okay. Let's get back to you, if we could, Dennis, a little bit more about where else these school safe zones are besides Kenya.
Oh, we do work with schools in both Vietnam and Laos. In both of those countries, the work is focused on ethnic groups, minority ethnic groups. That is, we're not working in schools with native speakers of Vietnamese or native speakers of the Lao language, but rather with the what were traditionally known as hill tribe peoples in both of those countries. Again, these are settings like the arid regions of Kajiado in Kenya, where students travel long distances to school.
Let's talk a little bit about the walking, and where does the word walk come in crop walk, Esther?
Well, our crop hunger walk is a walk-a-thon. These are fairly familiar, I think, to most people. On the 22nd, we will be leaving around 2 o'clock from University Place Christian Church, walking on a route of approximately 6 miles, 10 kilometers. Each of our walkers, we hope, will have signed up sponsors, pledging so much for the walk or so much per mile. We're hoping to raise $33,000, and we are hoping that we will get, in addition to what we raise here in town, we're hoping to get some matching funds from the Feinstein Foundation.
What is that?
This is a foundation set up by Alan Sean Feinstein. For the past, I think it's 14 years, he's been contributing $1 million to not exactly match, but to supplement the funds that are raised in March and April by groups like ours raising money to combat hunger. So we spread his name around. We encourage people to look at his website, and I don't have it right with me, but we could.
How is Feinstein spelled?
Feinstein. It's the Feinstein Foundation.
So people can learn more about that website, of course. How many people participate in this crop walk locally?
We usually have more than 200 walkers. Well, for the past quite some years, we've had 200-plus walkers. We keep aiming for 300. I don't think we've ever quite made it, but one of these years we will. And then there are more people who are involved in various other ways, as contributors, as crossing guards, as registrars.
And Dennis, how big is this nationwide?
I believe the number of crop hunger walks annually is in the range of 1,300 to 1,400, overwhelmingly in the United States, but not exclusively so. There are a few in Canada and Europe.
When you were in Kenya, did the children there, did the teachers there have any sense of people in America somehow caring about them and their education?
I think they did. I think it helped that we visited. They're certainly aware of the help that Church World Service is providing, and I think they know that most of that money comes from donors, from crop walks and some of these other individual donors that Dennis has been working with. Uh-huh. One of the things that really impressed me, one of the stories that we heard was at one of the schools there were a number of orphans for whom providing the school uniforms was a real challenge. And they did manage to have a small grant of money from Church World Service. And a woman in the area who was a seamstress who made uniforms. My recollection was about 50. My husband thinks it was more than that. Maybe Dennis can remember how many uniforms were made. But rather than just say, okay, come, these are for the orphans, they went, and this is where the school management committee really has an impact here. They went into the classrooms and they said to the children, "You should vote on who will get these uniforms." Well, the children know who really needs them, and the children voted, and so a number of children got new uniforms through this grant.
Oh.
It really impressed us. We came away very impressed with what's going on there.
What kind of sacrifices are parents having to make for their children to be in these schools?
Well, it's hard for me to know, really. If the children weren't in school, they wouldn't have to find the money for uniforms and supplies. Some of the children could be helping, you know, productive in the family. In this, some of the Maasai communities, some of the boys take off and follow the herds for months at a time, but do spend some time at school, and maybe not all of them go off with a herd. So they're foregoing some possible income there. I think the hope is that they see that this is an investment in the children's future.
Yes, I would emphasize Esther's statement that the parents forego the income which these children could earn by sending them to school.
And the children typically in Kenya start working very early.
Yeah, it would be casual labor. It might be selling things, or among the Maasai people. The school enrollment, there was a drought last year in Kenya, and that meant that the Maasai people had to take their cattle on longer distances to find water, and some families would choose to pull some of the boys out of school to assist with these longer-than-usual cattle drives.
Dennis, we learned from Esther earlier her background and how she came to be a coordinator of the local crop walk and to go on this trip to Kenya as a longtime contributor. What's your background that led you to what you're doing for Church World Service?
I was raised in the Church of the Brethren.
Where?
In west of Fort Wayne, Indiana, about 30 miles west of Fort Wayne out in the country.
So some of your folks may be hearing you today.
it could be. I've got a few relatives in the area still.
And how did you get from there to where you are now?
I graduated from college with a bachelor's degree in 1968. A few of our listeners may remember that there was a war in Vietnam in those days.
Oh, yes.
And there was military conscription. This was not yet the lottery system.
Now, the Church of the Brethren is one of the peace churches?
That's correct. I was registered as a conscientious objector and recognized as such by the draft board in my county there in Indiana. And volunteered.
No easy task, I might mention.
Well, that varied from one county to the next.
Very much.
So I volunteered for alternative service under the contributing to the national health, safety, and interest under civilian leadership, and was sent to Vietnam, working with Church World Service.
Oh, so that was your first contact with Church World Service?
That was my first contact with Church World Service.
And have you been with them ever since?
Not quite. I was in Vietnam for 5 years. Then I had a 5-year period where I did other kinds of things. Most of them had some relationship to getting a master's degree from Indiana University in East Asian Area Studies, and then in 1979 I came back to work for Church World Service and have been with them since then.
What was your undergraduate college?
Manchester College, North Manchester, Indiana.
Manchester.
A Church of the Brethren school.
Uh-huh.
Located out west of Fort Wayne.
Well, let me ask each of you, we're getting close to the end of our time, what your religious background has contributed to your ethics, your concern with world hunger? I guess, why do you care?
Well, I care because somebody cared for me, partly. I think it's not specifically Lutheran or specifically Christian to take as an article of faith that we have some obligation to these other people who share the planet with us. And those of us who have generous resources have an obligation to share them with people who are less generously provided for.
And Esther, why out of the many charitable organizations in the world did you happen to want to get involved, particularly with Church World Service?
Well, probably through the crop walk. We walked for a few years, and then I was asked to join the committee. And a few years after that, I found myself with the being the coordinator. But over the years, I've been really impressed with Church World Service's way of doing business, of not encouraging dependency, but empowering people to make a difference in their own lives and giving them the help that they need to do it themselves.
And Dennis, what from your religious background caused you to choose to be involved in Church World Service all these decades?
Well, we in the Church of the Brethren, something we share with Mennonites and probably others is a rather practical orientation toward our Christian faith. It's spelled out fairly clearly in the letter of James in the New Testament. If you see another person is hungry and you say simply, good luck to you, I hope things work out, the love of God is not in you.
So in terms of practical efforts, you see Church World Service actually doing some very practically good things.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, for being on Keeping the Faith. We've been talking with retired Professor Esther Portnoy from the Math Department, Actuarial Science area here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, who's the coordinator for the local Crop Walk, which will be happening April 22nd in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. We've also been talking with Dennis Metzger by phone from Church World Service, who has coordinated taking Esther and several other people from this Illinois and Indiana area, most recently to Kenya, to look at the school safe zones there that are supporting primary education in that country in East Africa. 80 different schools being supported by Church World Service, which has a traditional history of being a Christian organization, part of the National Council of Churches, but is right now, as we are having this conversation in late March of 2012, considering moving toward being an interfaith organization. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. And from 5 to 6 on Sunday nights, Central Time, I have had the pleasure over the last 13 years or so of interviewing some fascinating folks from many different religious traditions, involved in many different activities. It's an opportunity for me and listeners to hear from people's own minds and hear their voices talking about things that are of concern to them. This is all possible because of WILL, a public radio station. I encourage listeners, and particularly those who are listening online who perhaps have never made a contribution to WILL, to consider doing that through willpledge.org, willpledge.org, so that this public radio station can continue to do its good work. Next week on Keeping the Faith, I'll be talking with Jackie Lynn from the Episcopal Peace Fellowship nationally. April 8, Josh Slocum, the National Executive Director of the Funeral Consumers Association, and Reverend Peter Dick from Champaign-Urbana. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Home ownership has always been essential to the American dream, but for many, that remains a dream as they struggle to find safe, affordable rental housing for themselves and their families. I'm David Inge. Join me for a roundtable discussion with guests from around central Illinois working to understand and meet the need for housing in our communities. We'll hear about some innovative approaches that provide both shelter and a sense of belonging. That's Housing, a Basic Human Need, Tuesday, March 27th at 8 p.m. on WILL AM TV and online.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
Hi there, everybody.